All right, good evening, everybody. Erev Tov. We're trying to begin a series this semester on Kings 1, Shemachim Alo, dealing with some issues which, as I said last week, go beyond anything we've seen before. And I want to go over what I said last week in terms of Hakdoma, introduction to the Sefer. That's on record. You can listen to that. It's on YU Torah, and that share is available. But what I do want to try and deal with this evening is the issue of the rebellion, which we started talking about last week, of Adoniyah. Adoniyah was the son of David, who at the moment was probably the most eligible in terms of age to be the next king of Israel. The kingship was in the process of being transferred. David was coming towards the end of his life. And we know that in those days it was there were no sort of finesses about it. You know, you took the chance, as they say in English, you strike while the iron is hot. If you say that in this country, I'm not sure, but we certainly say it in England, meaning you go for it. And in this case, they really did go for it in the shape of Adoniyah, who was the son of David, one of the sons of David, but clearly older and felt himself to be much more eligible to take over the kingship. So that's the framework in which we're dealing with. And basically, we're going to deal with two issues. Issue number one is the fact that this story, as you will see, as it develops, is repeated over and over again. The actual event of the crowning or the self-proclamation of Adoniyah is repeated four times. And that is very unusual. We don't find that an event like this, or any sort of event which has an importance, gets a repetition four times in the same chapter by different discussions, different presentations which are made. As you'll see here, Bathsheba presents the facts in one way, Natan presents in another way, and the Pasuk originally presents it in its own way. The author, remember we said last week, the author of Sefer Melachim is Yirmiyahu Navi, Jeremiah the prophet. Whichever way you look at this, it's a strange thing, that there is an over-repetition of the events. So what we're going to look for as we go through it, and this is the page I gave you just now, are some of the nuances. This is something which I didn't invent this. This is a shir taken from Nechama Leibowitz, Zichrono Livracha, one of the great Bible teachers probably of the 20th century, without a doubt. Someone who, you know, I have sort of had a long association with. I wish I'd had a long association with, I have to be honest, but that's just the way it was. But certainly her share on this is quite magnificent. So I hope I do it a bit of justice, as best I can. So again, the basic issue will be the repetitions. Why is the story repeated four times? And a secondary, but equally as important question, I would say, is the whole story is very strange. We're going to see that there's somebody called Natan, the Navi. We came across him in Shmuel Bet. He's a gentleman that went to David after the story about Sheva, basically gave David a piece of his mind in his own way. He also made a promise to David. He made a prophecy, let's put it that way, that the king of Israel will be the product of the marriage of David and Bathsheba, and it's going to be Shlomo HaMelech. And that's a whole story which took place already back in Shmuel Bet. So, if there is a prophecy that Shlomo is going to be king, then what's all the fuss about? If there is a prophecy that Shlomo is meant to take over, then why over here, as we're going to see in very, very shortly, why does Natan get so excited about the fact that Adoniyah has made a rebellion? In the end of the day, if his prophecy is gerecht, is right, then it's going to happen. All right, that's presumably the rules of prophecy. At least that's what we presume. The Barbanel's got a different take on this. So we'll come to that. So again, two basic issues. Number one, the repetition. Number two, the prophecy. So let's look at the Psukim. We'll go through the chapter. It's a long chapter. Hopefully we'll get through most of it today. And again, you know, sort of try to see the nuances, try to understand what's going on. It's again, the first page of the book is page 3, I guess. Still page 3. I'm going to start from the Pasuk Hey. We read the bit of this last week, but I'm going to go over it again. And if you're looking at the page in front of you, that is section A on the page. It's columns, A, B, C, D. Okay, so we're going to look at section A. And what Nechama did in terms of the presentation is that she put these paragraphs side by side, A, B, C, D, the four ways that the story is told so that we can compare and contrast. She was the quintessential teacher, and she probably would have set this as some sort of examination in one of her classes, and clearly she wanted to present it in a way that would stimulate our interest in the words. So as we go through this, I'll just point out some things. We'll start with Pasuk Hey. It's chapter 1, verse 5. Adonio ben Chagit. We saw this last week. He proclaims himself to say, I'll be the king. All right? This is self-proclamation. So he gets his entourage, he gets his chariot, and he gets his riders, He's got to have the limo, he's got to have the whole works. And the police escort, 50 men running in front of him. Nothing has changed in 3,000 years. We mentioned this last week. His father had never rebuked him. To say, or as it says in the English, it never angered him. To say, Madua kacha sita, why did you do whatever you did? In other words, his father never told him off. He never got any sort of discipline at home, which is interesting. The gam hu tov tov ma'od, as we said last week, he's very presentable, he looks very good. A good presence, it looked good on channel, whatever it is that, except channel, whatever is not showing at the moment. V'oto yoldach Avshalom, and he was born after Avshalom. Avshalom is gone, he died, he was killed in his rebellion, and now Adonio is the next one in line. Now, who are his friends? We saw last week, V'yu devarim Yoav ben Tsruya, the famous Yoav, who we've spoken about so much in the book of Shmuel Bet. He has a kind of final fling in these two chapters. Yoav, who is Shlomo's cousin, David's nephew. Tsruya was the sister of David. Im Evyatar, a Kohen, he's got the Kohen involved, he's got the priesthood. V'yazru, we don't know Evyatar, I don't think we've come across him before. V'yazru acharei Adoniyah, and they followed Adoniyah, they got together. V'tzadok ha-Kohen, and there's an opposition. Tzadok v'nayo ben Yoyada ben Ayo was the head of the army for David. V'natan ha-Navi, and obviously Nosan Natan ha-Navi. V'shimi v'rei v'agiborim asher l'David, and various other gentlemen who were the giborim, the warriors of David. Lo ayu im Adoniyah. They didn't follow Adoniyah. They stayed loyal to David. This is where we got up to last week. Now listen to this. This is very interesting. This is the presentation number one. By Yizbach Adonio, Tzona Bakamari, he offered up these animals in Eben Azochelet, at the place called Eben Azochelet, the stone. Asher Eitzelein Rogel in Ein Rogel. By Yikroat Kolacha B'nei Amelech, Ulchon Sheh Yudav De Amelech, and he called all the people to come to celebrate, to be with him, to announce his coronation. And including Anshei Yehuda. I point that out because you'll see later on, interestingly, this is a fact which is missed out in the repetition of the story, which is going to be repetition number 3. And you'll see why when we get there. So just sort of bear that in mind. I also want to point out to you as well that we saw that the animals were offered. There's no embellishment. There's nothing about how big the animals were, nothing about how many animals. It just says they made Tzon Bakar Merit. They did sheep, they did oxen, and they did meri, which is some sort of fattened animal. That's it. That's all they were doing at this particular time. Doesn't go into any sort of minute detail as to what these animals look like, the size, etc. That's a piece of information at the moment which is not being shared in the story. However, at this point, we're up to where we got to last week, Pasuk Yud. Ved Natan HaNavi. What did Nosan do? All these people were not called. They basically stayed away. Okay, they were not with Adonio at the party. Now, Nosan, Natan HaNavi has got a problem. He knows what's going on. He's absolutely aware. So what does he do? He runs into the king's room and he says, "Oh, David, there's a rebellion." So you know what David will say to him? He'll say, "Nosan, Natan, leave me alone. Leave me alone. Whatever's happening, you've told me that there's a prophecy that Shlomo's going to take over. So what, as you say in Yiddish, was hakmi a chani? Why are you driving me crazy? Leave me alone." And Natan realized that if he would go and speak to the king without getting Bathsheba to do so first, the whole enterprise of the kingship would in fact, or rather the enterprise of letting the king know what's going on with Adonio would fall flat. Very interesting. There's a lot of seichel in what Natan does. Natan realizes he can't just run into the king's room and scream blue murder. Yeah, there's a rebellion, there's a rebellion. Because the king will basically just sort of turn over and go back to sleep. Leave me alone, Natan. You promised me, Shlomo, That's it, I know. It doesn't matter. David would not have been impressed. So what Natan does, he's a very smart operator. He says, look, in order to get the king's interest, I'm going to use a shaliach. Who's the shaliach? Who's the messenger? Bathsheba. The king is always very happy to see Bathsheba. And look what he does here. Apostle Yudala, very interesting. Vayomer Natan al Bathsheba, aim Shlomo lemo. So he says to Bathsheba, the mother of Shlomo, and this is stressed, as you'll see as we go on in the story, hello, Shama, did you not hear? Ki malach Adonio ben Chagid, that Adonio has declared himself the king, v'Adonenu David lo yada. And this is either read as a statement or as a question, and our master David knows nothing about it. In other words, have you heard what's up? Have you heard what's going on? And of course, he is now stimulating Bathsheba to go and speak to the king. If she goes and speaks to the king will not immediately reject her comments by saying there's a prophecy or whatever, because maybe, you know, maybe she doesn't know about the prophecy. Maybe she's not party to that information. The king will listen to her much more seriously than he would have done to Natan. That was Natan's estimation of the situation. So he says to Bathsheba, this is repetition number two of the story, V'yata l'chi yotzeich. Na etzah. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to give you an etzah. I'm going to tell you what to say. Because obviously she's very worried. It's said that she was Aim Shlomo. Why stress the fact she's the mother of Shlomo? Because when Adonios succeeds, if he succeeds, who gets the chop? Number one will be, obviously, Shlomo. He's going to be killed because you can't have a king and then another one waiting in the wings. It's just not going to happen. And there's going to be a terrible situation. And who's going to get the second exit, like the French Revolution? Who's going to go next? It's going to be the mother of Shlomo. So Bathsheba's life is really in the balance here. And she understands that. She's very savvy about this. So he says to her, I've got it. So Natan says to her, this is again, as I said, is the second repetition. The first repetition, the second time the story is being told. He says, I've got to give you an etzah, or malti ad nafshei, you'll save yourself. But nefesh b'nech Shlomo, and your son Shlomo. You're going to save yourself by what I'm telling you to do. So Natan is giving Bathsheba an etzah. Very smart. Look what he says. Pasuk Yugimo. Lechi bo'i el ha-melech David. Go to the king. Ve'omar te'lav and say to him, Alo ata aduni ha-melech. Oh, master king, nishbat ala matcha le'mo. You made a promise. Right, in other words, you're going to make the king feel, you're going to sort of get him worked up about this, because, you know, you're going to claim that he made some sort of oath, some sort of promise about the fact that Ki Shlomo b'nechim lo chacharai, Shlomo's going to be the new king, he'll sit on my throne, and therefore, kind of question, which is the obvious question, why is Adonio now declaring himself the king? And of course, it's very smart. It's basically a way of sort of stirring up the king, getting his absolute attention, all right? And obviously showing the king that it's very urgent. She doesn't, by the way, give any of the details which we had in the original description. Doesn't talk about the animals. She doesn't talk about the men of Judah. She doesn't want to frighten the king. Or at least that seemingly is what Natan is saying to her when she tells David, don't mention some of the details that we've already seen. You know why? Because he'll be very scared. He'll realize that this is more than just a sort of a minor occurrence. This is a major problem. So she's careful in what she says, or rather, Natan is careful to tell her what to say. Now, Pasuk Yudalep, if you're with me, Hine odach medaberet sham im ha-melech, and while you're still talking to the king, Ani avor acharech, I'll walk in, Meleti et devarech, and I'll fill in the gaps. In other words, you know what? If I come after you come into the room, then the king will be so ready to hear what I have to say, then it's going to be a slam dunk. Everything that's going to happen is going to happen in the right way. The king will take it seriously, and obviously he will make a response. And this, of course, is without discussing what the king's response should be. We'll come to that in a minute. So Bathsheba thought, this is a great plan, and we've got to move because, you know, we've got real problem here, and there's an urgency here. If we don't do something about it, nip it in the bud, we're going to be in trouble. Posek Ted Vav, it's such a great story. Vatavo Bathsheba la melech chadra, so she comes into the king, v'amelech zakeh ma'od, and Nebuchadnezzar is already very old, and of course this is increasing the tension. Because if he's an old man, and you know, he just doesn't want to get involved with this. He doesn't want to sort of have to deal with yet another issue. You know, he wants to retire to Florida already. You know, he's had enough. He wants to sort of get, you know, just go and be on the beach already. You know, Nilad, he's had it. And yeah, well, cheder, into the room, right? The Hamelazah came out, and he's very old. So he's probably laying there, and it says, and she's laying with him. Remember last week we saw, she's there to keep him warm, or whatever she's doing for him. And, you know, she is basically there, and he's Gavon Alt, he's old, and, he, you know, what is David going to do in this case? But this is where the fantastic twist of the whole story, it's a great twist. So what did Bathsheba do when she walked in? So she said to the king, Malach, what's up? The king said to her, Malach, what do you want? All right, Bathsheba, you know, why did you just come in? So she says, Adoni, ata nishbata b'shem elokecha lamatecha. She makes a whole big deal about the promise. You made an oath in the name of the Lord, that Shlomo will be the king, and he's going to dwell on my throne. In other words, that you promised Shlomo to be the new king. This is Bathsheba, the third repetition of the story. Now Bathsheba is talking to the king. And you know, what was that all about? The fact is that Adoniyah is now the king. He's just declared himself the king. And you, the king, did not know. And of course, at this point, very interestingly, she adds some information which she heard about the whole party that was going on to try and make the king be even more serious about it. She adds a word which we didn't see before. She says, not only was there an offering, there were the animals being slaughtered, but larob. There was a, you know, this was a major kiddush. This was a celebratory kiddush. Then you call lechol b'nei amelech, and not only that, but he called all the sons of the king. Ulev yatara kohen, uyav saratava. He's got Eviasa, he's got Zior, uShlomo avdecha lo kara. And not Shlomo. In other words, take it seriously. This is now a really serious rebellion. And she adds interesting information to get him particularly excited. She doesn't want to mention the men of Yehuda. Remember I pointed out before. She doesn't say that. She doesn't say that he's got all the men of Yehuda with him as well. Because then the king can get despondent. The king can turn around and say, that's it, I'm done. All right, he'll just sort of roll over and die basically. He's had it. No. That's something that she doesn't want the king to come out with. She wants the king to take it seriously. She's added some information which we didn't quite see before. And at the same time, she's presented in such a way as if to say, if there's something going on here which I needed to know about, David, why didn't you tell me? Now, Pasuk Chav, it's so interesting. The interaction here is phenomenal. And now the whole of Israel is waiting for you. Who's going to be the new king? So she's really put the, as they say, the bull in his court. And it goes on. When you die, then we will be considered chataim. Translated here, very difficult translation. Sinners, offenders. In other words, if I don't do something about this now, if you now die, then we will be guilty of not doing what we should have done to try and stop Adoniyah becoming the king. We will be chataim. We will be sinners, as it were. Rashi says, chaserim. In other words, if we don't do something about it, not only will we be at fault, but in fact, we'll probably be dead. Because you know what's going to happen? If Adoniyah takes over, I, Bathsheba, together with Shlomo, little Shlomo, who's about 12 years old at this point, we're going to be killed. So you should know, David, all this is a serious business. And of course, while she's talking, in comes Natan, just to make sure, you know, to have the effects. Time, this is like a Shakespeare play. This is where people are running off the stage, coming on the stage, and you know, it's to create the effect. Look at this, Chafbet. She's in the middle of the conversation. And in walks Natan. And of course, that adds even more credibility to what she's saying. And here comes the now Natan's version of events, fourth version of events. Ve'yagidu le'melech le'mor, hinei Natan ha'navi. So they told the king, here's Natan, he's arrived. Ve'yavo lifnei ha'melech, ve'yishtachu le'melech. They're coming in, they're bowing down to the king. Ala pavatz, he's bowing down, and he's here. And of course, now Natan, this is number D on your page, the fourth version of events. And he, again, is very, very interesting. He adds information which is even more, more startling than what we had before. Vayomer Natan. Natan says, Adoni HaMelech, Ata Amarta V'Adoniyo Yimloch Acharai. Did you really say that Adoniyo should be the king? Sort of similar to what Bathsheba said. V'hu Yeshev HaKisi. He doesn't mention the oath. Natan is very smart because he is very aware that maybe this is something which the king promised Bathsheba, you know, between them. And Natan maybe was not meant to be, as it were, a party to that particular amount of information. So Natan doesn't mention the oath which Bathsheba mentioned, that the king had promised her. There's a redak that talks about this when they got married. The king had promised, David had promised Bathsheba that Shlomo would be the king after he dies. So this was like a promise that was made right at the beginning of their relationship. And now Natan comes in. He doesn't mention that oath because, you know, maybe he's not meant to be party to that. So he is sensitive to what the king, what he thinks the king should expect him to know and what he's not expected to know. It's very, very interesting. A lot of nuances here. Kavhe, ki yorada yom yizvach shomri v'tzon laro. And I heard that Donio has now made this great party with all the animals, and he repeats, Larob, there's a lot of animals there, that he's slaughtered. He gives a whole list of who was called. He adds a little nuance here again, but he makes it even more serious. They're having such a good party, they're eating, they're drinking, everything is being done in front of Adonijah. This was not, again, mentioned previously. So it even adds more fuel to the fire of the urgency. They've already gone on to the main course. You know, they're not even, they're past the shmog, they're already sort of celebrating. They'll be benching soon. And of course, this really caps it off. They've declared, long live the king. King Adonijah, Yechi, long live the king. Now, wow. And that's the fourth version. And of course, as what I tried to show you here is that every one of these versions of the story is embellished by the person who says it. And this is really Nechama's vort. She says that really what happened here is that everyone here comes to speak to the king to give the version of events, or the original version of events, with a certain agenda. Everybody's agenda is slightly different. Natan, obviously, is in a situation where there's a prophecy at risk, because his prophecy was that Shlomo would take over. Obviously, Bathsheba's in a situation where she is being told by Natan certain things which she then has to go and tell the king, and she knows, she doesn't get it right, that her life and the life of Shlomo are going to be in danger. And of course, if you take it in a sort of deeper level, she may very well feel that the whole messianic enterprise is at risk. You know, she understands that she is the mother of the future king, the mother of Mashiach. So it's very difficult, very, very delicate, the whole situation. And this is why, and the Chama points out that in fact all the nuances here are being added and being put in here into the different variations of the story in order to give it bite. Everyone has got a different way of presenting the story, slightly different, in order to give themselves credence, to make the king sit up, to make the king aware what's going on. By now he's definitely sitting up, there's no question about that. And, you know, probably Avishag has probably just been excused, you can leave the room. And this is now a serious power, there's a serious meeting going on here. Chava. We'll deal with the prophecy thing in a second. And he points out that we were not called to the celebration. We who are loyal to you, myself, Benayo, etc., the whole list, we were not called. In other words, again, asking the king the question. David, if this is what you wanted, and you haven't let me know, didn't you let me know who's going to be the king? In other words, didn't we already decide, haven't we already discussed this, that it should be Shlomo? So we're now at an absolute moment of great tension. This is like the ultimate sort of pinnacle of the story. David is now sitting there. You can imagine, if you just picture the scene. He's laying on his bed. Okay, and he's getting old, and he's probably, who knows, he's having a very tough time here. And he's got in front of him, he's got Bathsheba, who's probably crying her eyes out, saying to him, you know what, that this is so serious that our lives are in danger. He's got Nathan, who's coming in with the more sort of, the comments in terms of prophecy, and the comments in terms of future kingship and everything else. And what does he do? What is David going to do? And the fact is, he's got three options at this point. Option number one is to throw up his hands and say, nothing I can do. Let him do what he did. In other words, as it says at the beginning, lo atzavo. He never sort of stopped Adonio in the past. Why should he stop him now? But of course, that is not going to be a great solution to the problem, because all of the consequences will be very dire. Solution number two, which I suppose is equally difficult, is that David takes up arms. Why would he not want to take up arms at this point? Think about it, what we learned with Absalom. What did he do when Absalom was killed? Cried bitter tears. Absalom, Beni, Absalom, Absalom. He's not going to go through that again. He's not, even with Adoniel behaving the way he does, the reality is it's still his son. He can't remotely face the situation of his to lose another son like this. Which as you'll see, eventually Adonio is killed, but after David has died. So he never sees the death of Adonio. It's just beyond belief that he'll have to go through all this again. So he's got one last option, and that's the one he chooses, and it's brilliant. He says, you know what, guys? Well, he doesn't say the word guys, whatever he said. Chevra, he says, you know what we've got to do? We've got to move things up a bit. I'm going to make Shlomo the king. Shlomo is kicking the ball around. He's 12 years old. Okay, he's not even bar mitzvah yet. He hasn't started learning his parsha. And here he is, and you know what? He's got to become the king. And it's brilliant, because it solves all of the issues in one fell swoop. Adonio, at this point in time, the ground is cut away from beneath him. In terms of all the rebels that are with him, they see that as soon as Adonio gives up, everybody gives up. He's got no backbone, no metal. Adonio is not prepared to take this to the extent Avshalom took it, which was into the battlefield. No way. He knows that he's got support, and he thought that this was going to be so easy because Shlomo was young and the king is weak. You know, it was a golden opportunity. And this is the miracle, the nace at the end of David's life, that with all his weakness, he made this decision. It was a phenomenal decision, fabulous. And look what it says. Look at this pasuk kafchet. Unbelievable story. I love this story. You can see I get very carried away. Pasuk kafchet. Vayana melech David, and it's melech David with all the malchus, with all the majesty that he can sort of rustle up at this time. Even in such a difficult circumstance, Vayana Melech David Vayoyma, and he says, Kiruli Lebatsheva, call Bathsheba, Tavolifne Amele, Tamolifne Amele, call her in, call Bathsheba back. Maybe she went out for a minute, it's not quite clear exactly where she was, or maybe she was standing at the back, call her forward. This is the decision. Vayishava Hamelech Vayoyma, and the king made a shvur, in other words, he realized he's got to do something serious. In order to make his word absolutely firm here, he's going to do something which he doesn't do very often, and he makes a shavua, an oath. And he says, Chai Hashem, by the life of God, Asher padad nafshi mikol tzara, who redeemed me from all my troubles, v'chasher nishbati lach b'ashem l'kei Yisrael le'mo, as I promised you through the name of God, ki Shlomo banech imloch acharai, that Shlomo your son will reign, for who yeshev al kisi tachtai, and he will sit on my throne. Ki kein eser hayom azeh. That's what I've got to do today. Today is the coronation. Now you can imagine, this gave the civil servants a bit of a headache. Don't arrange a coronation. I know in England, it took a year to arrange the Queen's coronation, 1953. From 1952, she was announced, took a year to do it. So this is being done in like 24 hours, not even. Probably being done, you know, straight off an order, as they say. But that's the way it had to be. There were no frills to this coronation. It had to happen. It had to take place because of the circumstance which was taking place. I just want to mention one thing before we go on about the prophecy, because that was the question I said we have to deal with. And the Chama makes some interesting reference here to the Barbanah. And this is just a comment which I don't want to go into, because it obviously needs a lot more explanation. But she says like this, that the Barbanah says that when it comes to prophecy, there are no guarantees. A prophecy from Natan to say Shlomo will be the king will still depend on, as it were, circumstances allowing that prophecy to take place. And she points out, according to the Barbanah, he says quite clearly, A prophecy is not a guarantee. Ein somchen al hanes. It's almost in the same category as what we say in Chazal. We don't rely on miracles. A prophecy is an indicator. It's going to be a sign of things that were going to take place. But it's not a guarantee. And therefore, of course, at this point in time, that's why the whole story takes place the way it does. That's why Natan gets so worked up about this, because on the one hand, there is a prophecy, but there's no guarantees. So he's got to make his shtadlus. He's got to do something about the situation. He can't just let it sort of roll on to where it was going, because it was going in a bad direction. So Natan had to get himself up and do something about it. And of course, this is a kind of controversial statement about the whole concept of nevuah, of prophecy. And I don't want to go into it. There's a lot to say. There's Rambams about it, Mor Nevuchim. There's a whole discussion there what nevuah is. And the Barbanon says it very, very clearly, that in this case, it wasn't guaranteed that this was going to be the outcome. Shlomo would be the king. It had to be made to happen. It had to sort of be engineered. And the way it got engineered was through the story with David, this whole enterprise of repeating the story to David over and over again, different ways. Initially, we saw four repetitions, but it was all necessary to bring home to the king the necessity to do what he did, and he did a phenomenal thing. And we'll just read through to the end of the chapter. Hopefully, we'll get through this, and you'll see how it all works out. It's incredible. Posuk Chavtet. Sorry, no, where are we? Posuk Lamedal. Vatikod Vacheva Apayim Eres. So she's overjoyed. She just bows down. She thinks that this is the most amazing thing. Vatishtachol HaMelech. She bows down to the king. Vatame Yichi Adoni HaMelech David Leolam. May David live forever and ever. In other words, she just is so overjoyed because she realizes that this was a Dvar Chochmah. This was a real smart thing that David did. Vayom HaMelech David. I don't think we've seen David referred to as Melech so many times in one chapter as we see it here. And of course, what I'm suggesting is that this is his final act of kingship, which is so interesting. Yeah.
Was there the idea that Shlomo HaMelech, Shlomo would have to grow up, mature first? Was that the idea they had to be at 13?
They were going to have to wait. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't know what age he was meant to. Oh yeah, Daniel was much older. I mean, one assumes that Daniel was maybe in his 30s. I would guess.
Wanted to wait it out.
Yeah, certainly, according to Chazav, he's 12 years old, as they say, you know, pre-bar mitzvah. It's very young for him to take over. The reality is that we see, once he's taken over, he's phenomenal. He's got this wisdom, you know, well, that's the whole story, that, you know, the famous story, when he asks for a present. Hashem says to him, comes to him in a nevuah, what do you want? That comes later, but he has already the makings of kingship. It was a joke in yeshiva many years ago. About the certain group of Hasidim who appointed a Rebbe when he was 8 years old. You probably know who I'm referring to, the Belzers. The Belzer Rebbe, who now is what, how old is he? 50, in his mid-50s, was originally, I think, appointed as Rebbe when he was very, very young. I seem to remember the story that he was 8 when he became Rebbe. And I don't know, it's to do with the fact that, because the elder brother ever died, and I don't exactly know the story. I'm not even sure if he's the son, maybe the grandson. I don't know the whole yichus. But I know he was Rebbe very, very young. And they used to bring him into Tishes in the post-war, the early post-war years, and it kind of looked ridiculous with all these guys with the sort of the long white beards and the Rebbe sitting in the middle, who's like a 10-year-old child. It was really it was incongruous. I think it's Belzer. I'm pretty sure it's the Belzer. But again, in the course of years, he's become one of the major Rebbes, no question about it, a major leader. One of the things I was overwhelmed by what the picture that came out was the Nebuch and the attack in Merkaz Aram. When 8 boys were killed, there were, I think, 1 or 2 boys that survived. And there's a picture of the Belzer Rebbe going to visit them. He actually went into the hospital to see them. It's not the obvious shidduch between the two, you know, sort of different Jewish worlds almost, but he insisted that he would have to go and pay a hospital call on the ones who had survived to give them chizuk. That was a story that came out of Israel not so long ago, the Belzer Rebbe. If you drive up to Yerushalayim, you can't miss that building on the left, which is meant to replicate or be something looking towards the type of building which is the replica of the Beit HaMikdash. Who built it? The Belzers. Okay, I think some of you will know what I'm referring to. It's right on the left as you drive out. You've got the bridge, the Geshet Tzamaot, you know, the famous bridge you come in now, which is an unbelievable thing in itself. But on the left, in the distance, you've got this phenomenal shul, which was also put up by the Belzers. So again, the idea of somebody taking over the dynasty at a very young age, it's happened. It's not something that is obviously encouraged, not something that we look to do out of choice, but in this case, there was no choice. And we'll just take it a bit further, see what happens here. And it's a phenomenal story. Lamed Bet. Vayom HaMelech David. Kirili l'tzadok ha-kohen, Natan ha-navi, bring all the guys in. B'nayahu ben Yehudah, v'yavo lifnei ha-melech, they all came in. In other words, bring them close, right? Because the king is probably finding it difficult even to sort of get this whole message out, but he's trying. V'yomah melech lahem, k'chu imachem et avdei adonichem, take your servants, rekavtem et shlomo b'ni al pirdash eli, put him on my donkey. This was always the sign of the coronation. They would ride the pered. V'horadatem oto al gachon, take him to the Gichon, which is the river. Again, crowning the king by the river was very symbolic. The river flows forever and ever. The king will have a dynasty which will last, you know, essentially forever and ever. That's the symbolism of crowning the king by the river. This is what was done in England by the Thames. Same idea. Probably got it from the Bible. I'm sure this is where they got the idea. So you always have coronations by the river, by the riverside. Lamadala, Moshachoto Sham, Tzadok HaKohen, you have to anoint the new king, Tzadok has to be involved, and Natan HaNavi, Lamelech HaYisrael, to make the king, Utekatem B'Shofar, you blow the shofar, Maratem Yechi HaMelech Shlomo, may the long live King Shlomo. V'alitem Acharav, Ubav Yashav HaKisi, bring him to the throne, he's got to sit on the throne straight away, a symbolic act of coronation, he's got to be there. Behuim lo tachtai, he'll be the king. Vatot siviti liyod nagid Israel val Yehuda, and he will be the leader. Nagid, nagid is an interesting word. It's normally translated either as king or prince. And nagid comes from the word neged, because leadership is always going to be, you know, it's going to be them and us. It's always going to be against. Neged means like opposite. So, you know, at the end of the day, that's leadership. Unfortunately, sometimes it comes into conflict with the community, a bit like sort of having a rabbi sometimes, same problem. And, you know, Nagid is an interesting word. It's sort of talking about a reality. But at the same time, he's being appointed, and this is the new situation in Israel. The guys take it very seriously. He says, Amen to the king. In other words, I'll do exactly what you say. So says the Lord. In other words, that this is not just the king speaking, but it's the word of Hashem. Lamed Zayin. Kasher ya Hashem im Adoni HaMelech, and he says a blessing, just as the king Hashem was with my master David. Kein yihi or yiyeh im Shlomo, so he'll be with Shlomo. Ve'yigadel et kiso mikisei David Adoni HaMelech David. His throne will even be greater. His kingship will even be greater than mine. In other words, it's a wonderful bracha which he's giving him that he should even be more successful than David was. Ve'yeret tzadok ha'kohem v'natan ha'navi v'nami yodah. The whole guys were kreti ha'pleti. These are like the soldiers, the guys who throw the arrows, the guys who sling the bows and the missiles or whatever. But Yakiva Shlomo Piridata Melech David, they did exactly what they were supposed to do. They took Shlomo, put him on this donkey that he rode. Ve'elichot al Gichon, and they took him to the Gichon, to the river. Ve'yikach Tzadok HaKohen at Keren Hashem min ha'oil. They took the special oil, which in fact was already prepared from the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. It was oil to anoint the king. Ve'yimshach et Shlomo, and they anointed Shlomo. It's such a wonderful story. Ve'yitkuba shofar, they blew the shofar. Ve'yormu kol ha'am yichia melech Shlomo. Long live King Shlomo. Fine. Now we've got a bit of a problem. What does Adonio do down the road? He's got a party going on. What is he going to do? Look at the next section. Interesting. Mem vayalu kol ha'am acharav ha'am mahalim b'chalalim. The people started playing the flutes. They started bringing out the klezmer. Usmeichim simcha gedola. This was a great simcha. You know, this is like the new king of Israel. But tigabokah ha'aretz b'kolah. I love this idea. The land almost like it almost created an earthquake. Like the land split almost because of the sound, because of the dancing. This is simcha sar and Purim all in one. You know, in the best yeshiva in the world. Vayishma Adonio kol ha'kriyim ha'sheita. Because of the noise, and they weren't far away, Adonio hears all of this, and he realizes, oi, there's a problem. Vahem kilu lechol, they'd already finished their food, they were benching. Vayishma Yoav et kol ha'shofar, Yoav heard the shofar. And Yoav was the seasoned politician. He understood that Adonio's rebellion has ended. If this is now the sign that the people are not coming in our direction, but they're actually having a party somewhere else, it must be for one reason only, that the king has decided to crown Shlomo. And Yoav knows it. Vayomer, and he says, Madua kol kiryahu ma, why is there such a noise coming from there? It's almost like a rhetorical question. I know why it is. You know what's going on? Adonio, we're done for. Odena medaber, he was still talking. Hey, Yonatan ben Eviatar, the son of Eviatar, called Yonatan, came. Hakohen ba, vayomer Adonio ba, bo, ki ish chayel ata v'tov tevaseh, And Adoniel said to him, come, give us good news. Okay, tell us some good news. And of course the answer was, I'm sorry, chums, there's no good news. Vayan Yonatan, Vayan Adoniel. So Yonatan says, Ava. That's the worst word that you want to hear. But, in other words, I'm sorry, the news is not good. Adonaino Melech David, Himlicha Shlomo, Shlomo's the new king. Now, at this point in time, Adoniel is faced with a dilemma. What does he do? Does he now try and bring the rebellion into a new level of fighting, of war, etc.? Or what does he do at this point? Has he got the backbone to do this? And the answer is no. And one gets the impression that almost to the point where he might... This is where I've got my doubts about Yoav. I've expressed this all along. That it could very well be that as much as Adoniel leads this rebellion, the reality is Yoav is supporting it. Yoav is the guy who he sort of manipulated in many situations that we saw before. And I'm wondering if now he's made up his mind, you know what, I put my money on the wrong horse and I regret it. And Yoav does regret it very much to the point where, in fact, you'll see in chapter 2, he's actually killed for this. Vayishlach ito ha-melech, next posse, we'll just finish the chapter. Pleased to say we'll get to the end. And the king sent et Tzadok ha-kohem and Natan ha-navi, Nayo ben Yehuda, v'kreti ha-pleti v'akivu otah pridat ha-melech. And this was the whole story that he told. Yonatan repeated that he rode the donkey of the king. They did the whole party, the whole coronation in Gichon. He told Adoniel the story. Everyone, the ground was shaking because of the simcha. They were dancing so much. That's the sound that you heard from the distance. This is very important. Not only did they crown him, he's already sat on the throne, which symbolically means that he's taken over, he's already running the show. Even though he's not, as they said, he's 12 years old. He's a little kid, but he's doing it. And the people came to give a bracha to David. May God make the name of Shlomo even greater than you. His throne will be greater than yours. And the king, as it were, sort of acquiesced to the blessings. He's kind of bowed his head, even though he was laying on the bed. He was clearly towards the end of his life. And he said, thank God I can see this in my lifetime. It's unbelievable. These are wonderful psukim. And of course, this is a bracha that every parent, you know, wants to see the success of a child. And you know, you think of this pasuk that David he gives such a blessing to God. Thank God that I've seen this. And of course, he's also thanking God that he doesn't have to lose another child in the process. Adoniel is not going to be killed at this point. So Adoniel's group basically got up. They disappeared. They just went away. As you can imagine, they were considering themselves in a bit of trouble. What does Adoniel do at this point? Adoniel himself, very strange. You know, you've got the older brother, half brother, who's probably much older, and now he's afraid of Shlomo. We'll talk about this next week. There seems to have been a system here to hold on to the Mizbeach. They had various altars in different places, and it was like a way of trying to save your life by holding the altar. The altar was a place of amnesty, seemingly. And we see it later on with Yoav, tries to do the same thing. We'll see with Yoav, the Gemara explains exactly what it was all about, why the Mizbeach was a place where you could go near it or hold on to it. The Mizbeach had kind of staves or poles, corners which were raised, and you've held on to the altar, then that was understood as being a place where you could sort of save your life, if that's the way to understand it. We'll come back to Mitzvah Shem next week, because we'll talk about it with Yoav, explain in a bit more detail. But we'll just finish the chapter and listen to this. Now, this is very interesting. Shlomo's got a problem. On the one hand, he's now Melech Shlomo, he's king. But on the other hand, he's got to deal with Adoniel, who's his brother. So what do you do? Do you treat him as Melech, or do you treat him as my brother? How do I deal with this guy? What do I do? On the one hand, I have to say, I've got to kill him, because he made a rebellion against David, deserves to die, Mored B'Malchut. On the other hand, as Tevye would say, he's my brother. I can't go and do this, especially as my father is still alive, and he doesn't want to see another son being killed. So what does Shlomo do? He already shows his wisdom. Brilliant. He says, firstly, we're told again what Shlomo knows. And Shlomo heard that Adoniel was hanging out literally at the Mizbeach, and it says, Yishavali kayom ha-melech Shlomo im yomid ha-davdo b'cherev, and he wants to get Shlomo to promise not to kill him. So he's asking for an amnesty, and he's asking for a pass. Now, Vayomer Shlomo, Shlomo says, im yeh leven chayil, if he behaves himself, listen to this, this is a 12-year-old, and he's really coming out with the right idea. He says, Adonio, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put you on probation. He says, I understand that, you know, you're ticked off about me because I took over, you know, when you wanted to take over. But on the other hand, I can't kill you now. I can't sign your death certificate, as it were, because, you know what? My father's still alive. Our father is still alive. I don't want him to see this. And at the same time, I want to give you another chance. So what does he say to him? He says, you be Ben Chayil, you be a good boy. Lo yipo masara to arta, you won't lose a hair off your head. In other words, you'll be okay. V'imra'at imatzei bo v'met. If you're not, you're ra, you're bad, then, or evil finds you, v'met, you're going to die. That's the challenge to Adonio. Go away, disappear, become like in England, you know, the Edward VIII. I always think of it when I learn this story, that the one who abdicated in 1936, what did he end up doing? He became the Duke of Windsor, and he went on to live in France, and never really was seen again. Till you heard about the fact that he died, and then she died, Mrs. Simpson, if you remember this whole story. It's a similar thing. Once you fall out of favor, then you've just got to disappear. And in that case, in the British monarchy, the guy literally it was a brocha because he was a very big Nazi sympathizer in the 30s. He became King of England. He abdicated very, very soon afterwards. Had he carried on, then the whole war might have taken a different twist. So that's the story which I compare it to. In this case, what Shlomo is saying to Adonio, in no uncertain terms, get out of here, disappear. Be a good boy, don't raise your ugly head ever again, and you'll be alright. And Pasuk Nun Gimel, the end of the chapter, Vayishlach HaMelech Shlomo, Vayirdu Min HaMizbeach, Shlomo gave an order, the king Shlomo, to take him down from the Mizbeach, Vayavo Vishlach HaMelech, came to bow down to Melech Shlomo, Vayomer Lo, Shlomo Lech LeBeitecha, go home. And I just want to point out one thing for you to think about as we go through the next three chapters. This is the thought of the day. We covered the repetitions. I hope that now makes sense, why it's repeated so much, this story. The nuances for different people presenting the story with their own agendas. And I think that's kind of interesting, and that's very realistic. Number two, we spoke a bit about the whole idea of the prophecy and the way that the prophecy was not a guarantee. And I think that's also important to understand when we go through a lot of the stories in Tanakh. Number three, and this is the point that I referred to last week, that last pasuk that we just read, you'll see the beginning of the pasuk, he's called HaMelech Shlomo. By the end of the pasuk, it says, Vayomer Lo Shlomo. His Shlomo said to him, go home. Now there's an issue here which I want to bring to your attention, which I think is really, really significant in these next coming chapters, is the fact that there is a difference between Melech Shlomo and Shlomo without the title Melech. When he's called Melech Shlomo, I'm going to argue very strongly he's behaving as a king with the laws of kingship. Now they may not necessarily follow the laws of Torah. They may follow the laws of Yashrus, they follow the idea of being a Yosha, being someone who is following a certain system, Dina de Machuta, whatever you want to call it. And then you have, at the end, Shlomo, he's also behaving as the individual, the brother, the son of David. He's got a kind of soft spot for Adonio. So what he's doing is he's also behaving in what I would call the more individualistic, what we would call the Rib Shlomo. That at the end of the chapter, as much as Melech Shlomo says that I will save his life, but Yomer Lo Shlomo Lech LeBeitecha, as a brother, as a confidant, as someone who really seems to have a sort of a place to keep Adonio alive, he says to him, go home, Geahem, and he says, just keep yourself out of trouble and you'll be okay. And what I'm going to suggest, really from this analysis of the last pasuk, is that there's going to be always a situation when we see the words Melech Shlomo, and when we see Shlomo without the word Melech. When we see Melech Shlomo, we're always going to have to ask ourselves, what is he doing here in terms of kingship, in terms of majesty? When we see the word Shlomo without Melech, then I have to ask myself, why did it miss out the word Melech? It must be because maybe there's another dimension over here. The dimension is not necessarily of kingship, but it's of the essence, the spiritual essence of who he was, the Rub Shlomo, the idea of Shlomo as a figure, as a Torah figure, as someone who is a family person, whichever you want to understand it. And I just throw that out at this point in time, just to sort of pique your interest. So when Mitzvah Shem, if hopefully you'll be able to read next week through Perek Bet, by the time we meet next Monday, you'll already see possibly some nuances in terms of the use of Melech Shlomo as opposed to Shlomo without the Melech. I'll explain maybe next week a bit more where sort of this idea comes from. So I had a teacher in London who sort of put me in this direction originally, and it really is very, very interesting to follow that idea through. Mitzvah Shem, next week, to be continued, chapter 2. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you. Have a good evening.